Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Lake Show, News Talk 830-WCCO. We're efforting Eitan Shander. Hopefully we will get him here this segment because we want to talk about some sports betting, man. And he does a phenomenal job with oddshopper.com. And we are in the midst of postseason action. People are losing their minds in a good way with NBA basketball. People are losing their minds with NHL hockey. There's so much going on. And just think about all of the upsets that we've seen. Like, at this specific point, up until Oklahoma City Thunder routed the Denver Nuggets last night, we were looking at the home teams being winless until that game last night. So imagine that. And by the way, the Wolves back in action tonight. They have a 7:30 tip against the Golden State Warriors. I'm not sure what the line is on that game. I think that the Wolves are favored. I know that they're favored. I don't know by how much, but this is, and I hate saying this, but I do believe it's a must win. The Wolves are favored by 10.5. 10.5? That's a big number. Although, look, the reality is, people are looking at the Golden State Warriors, and they acknowledge that the Golden State Warriors are in trouble, even though they lead this series 1-0 without Steph Curry. When you don't have Steph Curry, that changes the entire complexion of this series. To not have Steph Curry and his 24.5 points per game, that's devastating. And mind you, Anthony Edwards, I thought played poorly in game one. And the one thing that I loved about the reaction from head coach Chris Finch was that he called out Ant and said, Anthony Edwards needs to set the tone. Anthony Edwards needs to be that guy that gets us going. And he didn't do that. Now, Ant, when he was asked about that, he really didn't step up and just take responsibility. Right? Like, he said that, oh, you know, I was playing good defense and I was doing this and I was. That's not what I want to hear, Ant. I want to hear you say, yeah, coach is right. I didn't play anywhere near the expectations for what I should be doing. And let me just go ahead and write this off and do so much better next time. And by the way, we're going to catch up with Eitan. He's actually doing some television right now, so we'll duck in and check in with him at 8:05. All right, 8:05 is when we'll talk to Eitan Shander. But the reality is, when you look at the Wolves, I think that the Wolves are going to absolutely 100% win tonight. I'm not sure that they're going to win by 11 points, though. That's asking a lot. That's a big number. I get it, Steph is out, but that's still a big number.
I think they cover. I think they do. I was watching Oklahoma City last night, and yeah. I was just, like, irritated. I'm like, Oklahoma City scored more points in the first quarter than the Wolves did in the first half. Like, I look at it this way. You lost Steph, and how you cannot make up some room, so you know, how you can't make that up without Steph, you actually got outscored with Steph being off the court.
Yeah.
Because when he was, you know, when he left, you're down by 10. You lost by 11. But there's no Steph. I just have a weird feeling that the Wolves are going to come out with a ton of energy because you got to meet the moment. Like, you have to meet the moment right now. And
well, I'm not saying that I don't think that they'll... Well, I'm not sure that they'll cover. I mm-hmm. absolutely 100% believe that they will win the game. This is the thing that I don't like. Is why are you shooting so many damn three-pointers? That's the part of the NBA game that's bugging the hell out of me right now. Stop taking so many damn threes. Look, I get it, man. Everybody loves a good three-pointer, right? Anthony Edwards has done a pretty good job, solid job of knocking down three-pointers.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why the Boston Celtics are in an 0-2 hole is because they've shot themselves out of games.
Yep.
How are you up in game one and two by 20 points and you keep shooting three? You know what you do? You run some time off the clock. You attack the basket. Like, stop taking so many threes and missing so many threes. And look, I'm not sitting here saying that if Anthony Edwards is wide open for a three to not take it, or Jaden, or that's not what I'm saying. But drive to the basket when you are not making them. That's just, it's common sense. Draw a foul here and there. That's the part that bugs me, because the one thing that I have stated, and I've been consistent with this, is that we can sit here and we can all fall in love with three-point shots, but you know what to me matters still? Taking good shots. Taking good shots means mid-range shots too. Taking good shots means attacking the basket and drawing fouls. Taking good shots is what matters more than just taking a three.
But since Chris Finch has, you know, become head coach, they've been taking more threes. I mean, there was this very specific, don't take the mid-range shot. Like, the mid-range was not that high percentage shot. The Wolves this season have been, what, like a top 10 percentage team in terms of three-point attempts and three-point percentage. So I understand with staying true to who they are and what they've done throughout the course of the season. I do agree that if that shot is not falling, figure out a way to get to the rim. Figure out a way to adjust your offensive possession, because you can't keep doing that. But I will say, I don't think the Wolves can play any worse than they did in game one.
They played bad.
They played awful.
And I thought that they played bad defensively too, but let me ask you
this. Yeah, they did.
They're not as good of a shooting team this year than they were last year. So that has to be factored in too. Like, who was the best three-point shooter on their team last year?
Cat.
Okay, and he's in New York.
Correct.
All right, so and Julius Randle should not even think that he's the same type of three-point shooter that Cat is.
No, he's not. But this is kind of what the Wolves have done, though. I mean, there are times where they will take a bunch of shots and they don't make it. But, you know, the old adage, and you said that's why Boston lost, you can shoot yourself into games, you can shoot yourself out of games. The Wolves just happened to shoot themselves out of it and never shot themselves back in. So I don't expect...
So what are you saying do? Just keep shooting when you're missing all of them? They historically, and they said this to their face in the post-game presser, and Julius Randle and Ant looked and they gasped openly about how it was the worst three-point shooting exhibition in the history of two games in the postseason. So,
oh yeah, yeah. I'm not.
You have to adjust your play at times.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. But I think this team is also like, this is what got them there. So I don't think they're going to completely abandon it. You're right. Like, they, what was it, like 5 for 29 or something like that? It was a ridiculous number that they shot in game five against LA, and now game one against Golden State. I just don't think they were ready. I don't know if they were just, you know, getting a little fat and happy, thinking, okay, we dispatched Lakers in five, Golden State's coming in here.
I think there's probably a little bit of that.
You know, they just had this grueling seven-game series. They're going to come to our place. We're fine. We're just going to step on the court. This, to me, was...
We're not good enough to do that.
No.
We are not good enough to assume that the other team is not going to bring their best.
Well, especially when, as much as I dislike Jimmy Butler and I dislike Draymond Green, and I think they've got very punchable faces. They're both very easy to dislike. They're a couple of dogs. Like, they've got that tenacity and that attitude that the LA Lakers didn't have. Lakers didn't have that. Golden State's a different beast. And even without Steph, they're still going to be a handful. So I don't want them, you know, okay, yeah, you're going to be missing Steph. I don't want them to go back and think, okay, well, we lost game one, but we don't, you know, we're not taking on Steph, so we can go back and we can kind of do what we did. It's kind of like football. Take what the defense gives you. If the defense is going to give you the three, then you take it three. But if you have the ability to get to the rim, Ant scored, what, 1 point in the first half? You got to get to the free throw line, then you got to make your free throws. Bottom line, there's a lot of things that the Wolves just did not do well.
Coming up next, it's time for Bite of the Night. That's next here on The Lake Show. The Bite of the Night involves two politicians.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That we all know well. I know, I can hear you guys right now. Oh, here's Lake about to rant against Republic. It's bite of the night, man. And sometimes when you hear things, sometimes you scratch your head a little bit. So the first one is from one of Chris's favorite politicians, and that's Marjorie Taylor Greene.
It's my girl. That's my girl, dog.
And the reason why we're going to play this one is because, and I've said this a bunch of times, and it doesn't matter who it is. It could be Governor Walz. It could be Mayor Jacob Pry. It could be whoever, okay, across the spectrum of politics. That your constituents and the people, there's things that we clearly care about right now. Like, we care about the economy. We care about inflation. We care about the tariffs and stuff like that, whatever. Like egg prices, we heard all about that. There's so many things that we are concerned about, okay? One of the things that I don't think that Americans care about the renaming of the Gulf of Mexico. I just don't. I'm sorry.
Gulf of America, pal.
I don't think that Americans care about that the same way that Marjorie Taylor Greene does. Some people are saying she's deflecting because they want to talk about her insider trading thing with the whole stocks and stuff like that, whatever, which a bunch of politicians do on both sides, Democrats and Republicans. But this is Taylor Greene talking about the renaming the Gulf of Mexico to Gulf of America.
Honored to be here today in front of the American people as we debate the merits of the Gulf of America Act. This would rename the body of water formerly known as the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. This is such an important thing to do for the American people. The American people deserve pride in their country, and they deserve pride in the waters that we own, that we protect with our military and our Coast Guard, and all of the businesses that prosper along these waters. But Democrats today are outraged. They're outraged because they love the cartels more than any other people in the world, more than the American people.
You're damn right I love them drug cartels. I love them cartels.
What?
Yes, she's right.
What?
She's right.
Love the cartels?
I love the cartels. Love the cartels more than I love it because I'm a patriot.
Listen, do I think that the Gulf of America would make you care any more about this country? Of course not. No one cares about that, Marjorie Taylor Greene. No one. It's an international body of water.
I don't know how I can say this, but we do not own international bodies of water that we share with five countries. Like, this isn't ours. I think that it's kind of like freedom fries. It's like, oh, I got to have these freedom fries. Can't have French fries. Listen, at the end of the day, we're talking about something that if you say the word America, that's the dog whistle to people. You're like, if you say anything America or Mexico, it's going to be, well, obviously America, without having any context. It's absolutely ridiculous. Marjorie Taylor Greene, do you know that we do not own international waters? They are not ours. By the way, the Associated Press, they are not beholden to the United States.
I love the sarcasm on the text line from the 763. Why are you so anti-American? Why don't you want pride?
That's
why,
right.
Henry? Why?
Yes, Henry. You love the cartels. You love the cartel. The real American. is on this side of the room. Okay? Okay? See my blood? Red, white, and blue, baby.
Oh, my goodness.
Good thing I have good health care here. USA.
I just, at the end of the day, this is.
This is your best. This is the best.
This is not the fight that people care about now.
No, again, it's a dog whistle. It's
when I walked into Costco earlier today, yeah. I didn't hear the lady yelling, Gulf of America. I want my Gulf of America.
Have you not seen the T-shirts all over Amazon? It's huge. It's huge. Again, it's the red meat to the base, the low information, America or Mexico. Who do you side with?
Well, this is the other thing that's all right. So, and this is one I'm gonna, because we're having a little bit of fun at her expense, right? Because it's funny. This is the one that actually makes me more upset, though, is this comment from Donald Trump. All right, so let me explain it in this way. It's frustrating when people talk about the tariffs and the way that they talk about them, as though people are looking and they're still accepting some. I think the majority of people understand that the tariff stuff, that means it's going to be price hikes for all
of us. We're going to pay more because we're the consumer.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a smart person understands that. If you are still buying the other side of that, then I just can't help you. Well, he was asked earlier about the ports because now we're seeing it's impacting because people are talking about, the ports are impacted, the containers and all this other stuff, whatever. Listen to what he had to say about how it's trickling down already and we're starting to see the impact of the tariffs with the ports.
Because business has slowed down, as you mentioned, we're seeing as a result the ports here in the U.S., the traffic has really slowed, and now thousands of dock workers and truck drivers are worried about their jobs.
Yeah, no, that means we lose less money. You know, when I see that, that means we lose less money. Look, China was making over $1.1 trillion, in my opinion. You know, different numbers from 500 billion to a trillion or a trillion one. I think it was 1.1 trillion. And frankly, if we didn't do business, we would have been better off. Okay, you understand that. So when you say it slowed down, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. But we're going to make it so they can, I'd like to say they can do better, actually, in terms of the bottom line. We'd like to see China opened up so we can compete in China and, give people something that they've never had, access to something. That would be great for the world. It would be great for our businesses. And I think it would be great for friendship.
Doing less business is better for America?
You notice that
how people will justify this makes no sense to me.
Do you know there were? Did you notice that he said, "Well, in 1.1 billion, in my opinion, or I think these are not hardened fact, hardened relevant facts. Very, very loose with it. And when you're talking about less business." That's not a good thing. That's not a good thing. When things are slowing down, that's not good. Who does that benefit? Like, it's a bunch of gobbledygook. And, to go with that, I can't even make the comment about, to quote Chad Hartman, you're anti-big cartel. You hear something like this and you're like, you have the absurd, but then you have the very concerning because you hear this. And there's no factual evidence to back it up. And it flies in the face of conventional logic that is going to affect the everyday American. And it can piss you off and annoy you to know that people are like, don't believe your eyes, believe what you're being told.
Coming up next, we'll get back to the sports world. Sloan Martin. I got to talk WNBA, and I also want to get her perspective on what's going to happen with the Wolves tonight and what she thought of Game 1. We do that next after weather on The Lake Show. I love chatting with our next guest, Sloan Martin. She's joining us courtesy of the John Chichicola Banker Hotline, play-by-play broadcaster, Big Ten Network, NBC Sports, Fox Sports, the radio voice of the Minnesota Lynx. She joins us. Sloan, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Henry. Yeah, we are quickly shifting gears, you know, even though plenty of staff members are pulling double duty with the Wolves and the Lynx. I'm firmly in that mindset just about a week or so from the regular season start.
Were you in Chicago earlier this week?
I was indeed. This is a little bit of a dry run, so you didn't miss me. I won't be officially on the air until that regular season opener, which is going to be at Dallas against Minnesota's Paige Beckers, actually, down there in Arlington in the DFW area. But, you know, it's like riding a bike, Henry. You know, I've been transitioning to TV the last couple of years. That's firmly, you know, where my comfort zone is now. But it feels like just getting right back on.
Yeah, but you're going to be doing both, right, this entire season, right?
I'm going to be just the radio voice.
Oh,
yeah, so I'm
really?
Traveling with
no,
the team. Yeah,
no, no.
Every single game.
So no TV this summer at all?
Not this summer. The rest of the year, though, nothing else is changing in terms of the rest of my schedule. I just decided I needed more trips in my life because I'm not away from home enough, apparently. But no, it's going to be radio 100% home and away, and including the playoffs.
I got you. That's awesome. And it's exciting news. I saw you tweeting about it just a few days ago. So congratulations again to you, Sloan. I do, before we get into the Lynx, and this is just kind of a general NBA, I guess, take, because it's bugged me for a while. I just want your maybe take on it. When I watch NBA basketball, and look, I love my Wolves. I'm a season ticket holder. I love watching the NBA. I hate, though, that I just hate how many three-pointers are taken. Like, it's super frustrating to me. It's been the talk of the Celtics series. It's been the talk of the last two games by the Timberwolves. Of course, they finished off the Lakers in that final deciding game, and they missed a bunch of threes. They missed a bunch in game one. But when you watch NBA as a casual observer, do you get frustrated about how many three-point shots are taken? Because I get it. Like, I know that times change and everything, but everybody can't be Steph Curry. Everybody can't be Klay Thompson. Like, do what you do best. Don't take as many threes as you're taking.
That is what every college player, both men and women, also need to hear as well, Henry, that they're not Steph Curry, because that definitely pops up quite a bit too. But I think it's worth having this conversation with the last couple of results that we've seen. Obviously, as a fan, it is frustrating to see that many misses. I also think of it selfishly as a broadcaster as well. There's only so many ways, so many times you can say no, off target, off the mark, misfires before it just feels like you're, you know, beating a dead horse out here, basically, with how many misses there could be. And that's just not fun for anybody, a casual fan or a diehard fan as well. So while we obviously get it, we understand it, when you look at points per scoring attempt and the reason this entire game has gone five out and extended, you know, as much as it has, I still feel like I have an appreciation for the mid-range, the back to the basket.
Yes.
I grew up with the dead ball era, so to speak, in the early 2000s and late 90s. That's when I was coming up, you know, as a basketball fan. So there's a soft spot in my heart for that. But I think it's worth questioning, could we see kind of a pivot, or not quite a reversal, but a shifting of the paradigm when it comes to analytics in basketball?
And that's what it
that's
is.
That's what the numbers say. But we're even, Henry, seeing it in baseball, where teams are maybe even backing off the, you know, the three true outcomes and saying, hey, maybe it's okay if we just hit the ball and play, and it doesn't just have to be a strikeout, you know, fly ball home run at all times. So I think it's interesting to see what adjustments could be made, especially with a team like New York is one that comes to mind. OKC comes to mind too, where they just have gamers and guys who are just able to get it done.
I mean, I could only imagine what it would be like for Sloan Martin doing the last couple of Celtic meltdowns or game one for the Wolves when they just continue to miss three after three. After, heck, I can miss threes. Sign me up. I'll play for the league. I'll play for the league minimum. I'll play under the league minimum. I'll miss a three if you want somebody to miss threes.
Right? Doesn't it feel that way? Because it's, I mean, the numbers are just eye-popping. They are shocking. And yes, you know, there's dips and roller coaster rides when in terms of the numbers, and you can't always depend on that three-point shooting, even for the players who are the most skilled shooters in the world. But my gosh, a bad stretch for many games.
Yeah. So Sloan, let me ask you this. When you look at the Minnesota Lynx, what would you say are reasonable expectations, or just the expectations of this team going into this season? Because last year, I'm not sure that we knew the answer to that. And ultimately, they were that close to winning in the WNBA Finals. So you would think that probably the expectations are drastically different this time around.
Absolutely. We weren't sure exactly what this team was going to be last year at this time around training camp. They were undersized, some players who they were maybe expecting career years out of. They got those career years from players like Alana Smith, Bridget Carlton, Courtney Williams, for example, Nafisa Collier becoming one of the best players on the planet and ending up second in MVP voting as well at that for Minnesota. This year, the expectations completely rationally are competing for a championship. This is a team that the very first day of training camp, they all gathered together as a group, and Cheryl Reeve, Rebecca Brunson, and Lindsey Whalen, all members of the coaching staff, shared their memories of a brutal ending to the 2016 Finals Game 5 when there was a missed call. The LA Sparks end up winning that championship. And that chip on that shoulder that fueled this entire team through the offseason and into 2017, and then they end up hoisting the trophy at the very end. So I don't want to say there's exact parallels between those two teams. You know, that Lynx Dynasty team, they had won championships plural together before, as opposed to this one, which is really just starting out on this new era of Minnesota Lynx basketball surrounding the superstar Nafisa Collier. But I think you can absolutely say these players were feeling those exact same feelings. We heard, you know, early on here in training camp how much it has fueled them, how much it hurt, how much they want to forget what that feeling was so that they can go ahead and erase that and raise the trophy themselves. So I think it's absolutely a factor. This team is hungry. It's determined. That chip on their shoulder is big. And still feeling like even Vegas doesn't have them as a top three contender in order to compete for a WNBA championship. I think that is further fuel for this fire for the Minnesota Lynx. But you look at this group, basically the continuity, the entire starting five brought back as well. There is plenty of reason to think that they expect to get back there again.
Talking to Sloan Martin here on the Lake Show News Talk, 830 WCCO Radio, voice of the Minnesota Lynx. And when you look at the Lynx, of the younger players, okay, because this team isn't old, I wouldn't necessarily just say that they're young because they do have some vets on the squad, but who do you think needs to take that gradual, or maybe not even gradual, but take that next step? Because when I look at Diamond Miller, I think that this is Diamond, that she has to take that next step. When I look at Alyssa, Peely?
Peely, yeah.
I didn't think she had a good rookie year. And clearly, I think a lot of people look and they'll see that Chicago ended up with, I'm blanking on the name right now.
Haley Van Lith?
No. Last year. Angel.
Oh, that's right. Yep. Angel Reese.
Yeah, Angel Reese performed at a high level and Peely didn't, and they moved out of that spot. So who of the players for the Lynx that need to take that step, who is the person you kind of have in this?
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Spotlight.
Well, Henry, just taking the answers right out of my mouth here. My first answer when you originally brought this up was absolutely going to be Diamond Miller, for someone who has just had the beginning of her career affected by injuries. And that's going to, you know, put behind that development. She said as much, where she is coming off a full and healthy season. She played overseas in Poland in a place where she joked there's nothing else to do but to play basketball and improve your game as well. So she's feeling really confident coming in too. And head coach Cheryl Reeve says she envisions a second unit that can play with a completely different and dynamic kind of pace because of Diamond Miller's unique ability, unique on this team, maybe unique in the WNBA in terms of the number of players who can play at her speed in transition specifically. I think she's learned a lot in her first couple of years, though it's been up and down in the WNBA so far after she was drafted second overall a couple of years ago, about learning about shot selection, what makes the most sense within the context of the game and within her game as well. So I think she has the opportunity to really blossom and has that green light from Coach Reeve to say, hey, push the pace. This is what your skill set is. Push it in transition and look to score every time that you're on the floor. I would definitely put Alyssa Peely in there too. She went 3-for-3 from beyond the arc in their preseason loss against Chicago, the first of two. They'll play the Sky again on Saturday, but she said year two is completely different. You are no longer that rookie deer in the headlights, to use her term too, though that is not unique to her. That's a pretty common experience. But you can just tell the confidence she's playing with, so much more composure right now as well. And then I would also pick from the second unit as well in Natisha Heidemann. She had career low numbers last year compared to a pretty significant role she played with the Connecticut Sun, went to the WNBA semifinals multiple times with that team, but eventually found her role coming off the bench, leading that second unit, someone who plays with multiple different lineups. I can really see her offense coming to life, back to what we saw a couple of seasons ago as well.
What kind of mood is Cheryl Reeve having going into the season?
You know, that was something we would talk about, where last year it was going great. When you win a franchise record 30 games, that's going to feel like, you know, things are going pretty well. The vibes are going to be good around the Minnesota Lynx. And I would say it's the same right now. I think, Henry, and a big part of that is also just the culture of this team. You know, this team is so mature. They have talked about, we cannot take anything for granted. We cannot assume that there's going to be complete easy transfers from last year to the next in terms of their chemistry, connectedness, their defense, and their competitiveness too as a collective unit. Yes, we're going to have those building blocks as opposed to starting from scratch last year with this group that is basically completely intact in this 2025 season. We can't take that for granted and just assume it, though. So we're going to work on the base we already have and build it back up again. So this is a team, I think, Henry, that is a pleasure to root for, a pleasure to be around. And you can just tell there are mature professionals on this team. And I think that's just a great working environment for everyone involved, whether it is media or those that are on the inside with the coaching staff and players and everyone else, the ripple effects of who is affected. It's just a great group of people to be around. So that's why I would say vibes are still good because of the great people that are around, professionals, just mature athletes.
Hey, two more questions for you. What did you make of the Carly Samuelson move?
Absolutely fantastic. Not only does Minnesota keep a Chicago first round pick, which some people might be high on Chicago, I think, at least coming in, and I could be proven very wrong, I think they're a franchise that's still in a rebuilding mode with a lot of young talent. So there's a potential there, Henry, for that pick that they were able to maneuver and keep from the Chicago Sky in this trade. That could potentially be a very high pick. We're going to have to watch and see. Pay attention to the Chicago Sky, because that could have a direct effect on the Minnesota Lynx. But Carly Samuelson is a perfect embodiment of what I was just talking about, Henry. Someone who was undrafted out of Stanford, who would sign numerous seven-day hardship contracts. You sign with the team, you play that night, into a starter the last 2 years. She's shot 40% from three the last two seasons. So she brings, again, that maturity, that professionalism, that energy, that positivity that keeps you around in the WNBA when you are struggling that much and teams keep calling your number again to bring you back. So between the skill, the shooting, and the person who she is, Carly is going to be a great person to root for. Maybe one of the top people to come off the bench for Minnesota this year.
Give me your most underrated player on the Lynx.
Most underrated player on the Lynx.
And I'll give you mine.
Okay. It's hard for me to choose between Bridget Carleton and Alana Smith. I think people maybe don't see all the little things that they do. I'm going to go with Alana Smith because she takes a beating every single game. She's playing out of position. She's undersized for being a five. She's not really a five. She's just forced to play that position here. So she's guarding 6'7" Camila Cardoso, who plays for the Chicago Sky. She's guarding huge centers all around the league. She's taking charges all the time. She's an excellent defender, works incredibly hard, will take the right shots when is needed from her, doesn't care about the numbers. I remember one game last year, Henry, where she scored 0 points but led the team in plus minus in a win. So she's someone who I think is completely unheralded.
We agree 100%. That's what I was going with. Alana Smith. I mean, I just stuff. And like, in during that postseason run, like, there were games where she was just getting beat up. But she,
oh, yeah.
I mean, you're talking about utilizing your body, and I just love her game. You know, I think what was it last year? She averaged 10 and 5 and 3.
That's right. I mean, just an off the charts year for her. Does all the little things, does the hard things really well. So we're on the same wavelength here.
Plus, I got a crush on her anyway. So anyway. Hey, Sloan, I look forward to chatting with you throughout the year.
That'd be great, Henry. Yeah, anytime.
All right, take care. That's Sloan Barton checking in here on The Lake Show. Let's take a break. We went over. We'll do headlines maybe at the end of the show because we only got a couple of minutes left here in hour 2 right here on The Good Neighbor. All right, thanks again to Sloan Martin for being on the show. We'll do headlines at the end of the show. Quick update from Target Center. The Wolves lead 13-5 with 4 minutes left in the first quarter. The Wolves had started the game 13-0. So now the Golden State Warriors are trying to creep back into this thing. The Wolves should not have a ton of trouble tonight, I don't think. No, when I say a ton of trouble, I'm talking about in terms of winning. I'm not talking about in terms of covering. Do I think that Golden State is going to be aggressive? They're not going to lay down. That's not what Steve Kerr does.
No.
His teams are not going to lay down. But the bottom line is, the type of intensity that the Wolves came out with to start this game, different.
Yes.
Different
very,
level.
Very, very much so.
That was about as intense a first 5 minutes that I've seen from the Wolves defensively ever.
Yeah. When you're up 13-0 and now 13-5, I just had this feeling after Chris Finch called everybody out and when he all but said, well, if the officials aren't going to call these fouls, then we might have to get a little more physical. We might have to, you know, when he was talking about, you know, Jonathan Kuminga, you know, and Kevon Looney that were holding Rudy Gobert and Steve Kerr, you know, the other, opposite that. Well, we had some, you know, some issues with the officiating too. It's one of those things that you really find out what a team is all about and what their merit is all about. And I think the Wolves have responded. Now you have to keep it up though, because any sort of letdown, and I mean, you know, we've seen what happens when Buddy Hield gets hot. You know, and he's been kind of a journeyman, but Buddy Hield, if he can keep Golden State in this, you got Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, like they got some dogs. They got some guys that can go.
Yeah.
As much as I don't like them.
Coming up next, I think this time around we're going to get Eitan Shander.
Confirmed.
Yeah, he'll join us next year on The Late Show.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.